everybody. Welcome to the Four Down Podcast. This is part two of our talk with Rob Mahoney. If you missed part one, go back and listen to it on 40minutesofhell.com or download it on iTunes, please. This is part two. We get a little more off topic in this part of the episode with Rob, but nonetheless, we enjoyed chatting with him, so hopefully you guys enjoy it just as much as we do.
Tell me, Rob, I mean, so coming into the let's do some really erroneous kind of projecting here. You know, if you had asked me what the division, the Southwest Division, was going to look like at this point in the season, I probably wouldn't. And I'm not just talking about the order of the teams, but their actual records as well. I probably would have said, I probably would have missed a few things. I would have gotten a few things wrong. I probably would have had neither the Spurs nor the Mavs to have the record they currently have, and I probably would have the Grizzlies with a better record.
I completely agree with that, but you know, Randolph's injury factors into that a fair bit too.
Fair enough. How do you think, you know, going forward, how do you think things continue to shape out? Do you see San Antonio taking the division again?
I think that's very possible, especially with just how well Popovich has kind of paced the minutes and whatnot for the players thus far. But at the same time, Rick Carlisle has done a lot of the same things, albeit to lesser extremes than Popovich has. You know, keeping – I think Dirk has, you know, the most minutes per game for any Maverick, and he averages like 33. And beyond that, everyone's pretty much in the high 20s or the low 30s, you know, all the big players. And that's really important for teams this old, honestly. And so, you know, I think it's a coin flip between Dallas and San Antonio. I think Memphis is just a little too far back. But even then, I think they can make maybe a serious run once Randolph comes back. They're obviously going to be a very good playoff team once he gets back in the lineup. But, I mean, they're only a couple games back, I want to say, of San Antonio and Dallas. So, I mean, I think Houston might be kind of peaking where they are. Like, I don't see them as better than a fourth or fifth seed in the West. And firmly behind, you know, the Mavs and the Spurs and the healthy Grizzlies team. So it really just comes down to how well Randolph is integrated once he gets back in the lineup and how quick that process goes. And, if that goes according to plan from Memphis's perspective, I think it's a three-dog race. And it really is just an even split. I don't think any team has a significant advantage over the other. It's razor thin.
Right. Do you see any of them as having – significantly better shot than others to knock off the Thunder? I know there was a recent like 5-on-5 discussion, possibly even today's 5-on-5. Do you see that as something, or do you see the Thunder making it out of the West?
Andrew and I talked about this a little bit earlier.
Should we not? We don't have to return to it then.
I mean, I guess the way I can kind of cover this ground quickly in a way that isn't totally redundant is to say that I think the Mavs and the Spurs are the two next in line. I think I would like both of those teams better to upset the Thunder or to make a big run in the playoffs rather than the Clippers or the Nuggets or the Blazers or the Lakers or maybe even the Grizzlies. I think those are two are the next position behind the Thunder. I think it's very close between them, which one stands a better chance. And it really does just come down to which opponents they happen to run into. But I think both of them are very well situated for a substantial playoff run if they can play their cards right.
Do you think that the way the playoffs are so different from the regular season hurts the Spurs, depending on matchups?
What do you mean in terms of the way the playoff differs?
Well, how it slows down, it's a little more physical. And there's, I guess, more of an emphasis on efficiency I think because there's fewer possessions, so efficiency becomes more important on both ends of the floor.
Well, I think, you know, I see some of that. You know, some teams slow down a little bit, some teams play more physically. But moreover, I think it's just if you play the same opponent 7 times in a row or 5 times in a row or 6 times in a row or however long a series lasts, how many of their weaknesses can you uncover and how many of their strengths can you actually expose as being less strong than they are? And so with San Antonio, I think you look at like, their system is rock solid. Like, the Spurs are very dependable from a systemic point of view. It works. The driving kick, the corner threes, you know, Duncan as either a low post guy or a high post guy, you know, Mono and Tony penetrating, it works. And so from that perspective, I think they have a leg up on a lot of teams who don't have that systemic basis to fall back on. And at the same time, I think you've also seen, even with an aging Duncan, even with Parker and Ginobili as the players they are now, I think there's a lot of strength there that really has proven, you know, they aren't players that are going to be exposed in a playoff series. And so from the perspective of the Spurs, I think they might have a leg up against a lot of teams. Maybe even, you know, people talk about, you know, this team has been there before. These players have been there before. And what that means to me is not so much that, oh, this team has experience, just that we know that these strengths are really strengths and that they're not going to fade when a coach has a chance to dissect them over the course of a series.
Hmm. I think that's a good reinterpretation of that, like, cliche to be something that's more substantive. Actually, I really like that.
Spirit animal.
Spirit animal. That's what I tell you. I tell you, it's always like, it's like he, you know, it's like, ah! Like, so,
you guys are going to need some bird-like bumper noises to put on whenever I come on here. A little cacao. Or maybe an owl.
Have some whispers in the background. Spirit.
Yeah. Straight away. Exactly.
That would like be lovely.
Like a didgeridoo. Like a wow. Wow. Yeah.
We're just going to steal the Lee Ellis tweet of the week from the Jones and change it into the Rob Mahoney spirit animal.
That sounds wonderful.
Things get pretty... Things get pretty trippy whenever Rob comes on. So, do we have anything else we want to get to on here? There's probably...
I kind of want to talk about the Portland game, the Spurs-Portland game, and I'll get Rob's thoughts on how blatant... I didn't see it as a negative, Pop not playing Duncan or Parker with Splitter and Manu injured and just showing no desperation to win a game. But I'm curious to get Rob's opinion on just how like blatant it was.
Oh, I love it. I mean, yeah. It's the same kind of thing. I forget who they were playing, and you guys may have more information on this than I do, but a couple of years ago, it was like there was another team in the West that needed, you know, proving ground to really establish themselves as a contender. And it was like a nationally televised game. I want to say it was like the Lakers or the Nuggets with Carmelo.
I want to say it was Denver.
Denver. There was a game where they were maybe even tied in the standings.
Yeah, like, I think
you were tied in the standings. And it was like – and it ended up being like the game – like it ended up being really critical in the final shakeout. It was that year where like the West – really was just was. I mean, it was that one where like the finish between like 3 and 7 was like basically like one game and lots of tiebreakers. And he just sat everybody anyway, just
a big middle finger out the door. See you guys.
You can make books and books of the great Popovich memories over the course of his career, and that has to be one of my favorites. Just like the blatant disregard for the needs of the other team, any semblance of like establishing momentum. And it's just kind of like these constructions that we create as outsiders, and we tend to be so important. Like, oh, this is, you know, this is a must-win game. This is a statement game. And Greg Popovich shits everyone just because he can. And because, like, at that point of the season, it didn't even seem like everyone needed rest.
The cover of that book is Greg, the bearded Greg Popovich with two thumbs up after intentionally fouled Shaq on the, like, 2 seconds into the season.
And that play, I mean, I know that that's... Everyone like kind of laughs about that play, but the fact that he would actually—it
was the greatest thing I'd ever
seen—a play in an actual game that counts in order to just make a joke.
Yeah,
is like it feels borderline impressive. It just shows like it's like there's some times where it's like his. He oscillates between being willing to do anything to win, a la the Hack-a-Shack, and then showing an almost utter disinterest in the notion of winning. As if the game were about other things.
Like, I mean, think the best way to think about it is, like, Popovich as performance artist. Like, he's so self-satirizing sometimes that he's just, like, messing with all of us and happens to win 60 games and, like, some championships in the process. Like, he's above all of us.
There was somebody earlier this year that I was theorizing with on Twitter that he actually orchestrated their first round loss last year as middle finger to the media. Like, his disgust for the media reached such a fever point that he just decided that he was going to lose the game, lose the series, just as a way to, like, screw with everybody's heads.
Well, and this is the reason that I've never been totally convinced that the fake Coach Pop account wasn't actually Greg Popovich. Just because I'm always like, always deep down, there's like, it really could. He seriously could do that, just screwing with us all.
Oh yeah.
But it's not. But it would be so great.
You can't be true, though. You know, like, the guy is actually running maybe like a cyborg that Pop built in his basement to run this Twitter account. You know, he's just so unapologetically cavalier. I don't understand how anyone could not love him, and like love that he was, you know, in a big statement game for the Nuggets, just bench everybody or, you know, kill a win streak. Just to prove that it really doesn't matter and it's more important to have his players healthy. Like, he's a
right.
big picture guy in every sense of the word.
Because he is a big picture guy, but he's like, it's amazing because was that Portland game, did they have a game the previous night?
Yeah. Yeah, they played the Jazz the night before.
That's right. And admittedly, they had played a few games in a row that were a little bit close.
Mm-hmm.
And for a little bit, because that Jazz game was pretty hard fought, right? And then
yeah,
the Clippers obviously went to overtime.
Duncan and Parker each played 38 minutes in that Jazz game.
So in some sense, this particular, you know, sitting of Parker and Duncan, I think was far more predictable.
Yeah, it was totally justified in my book.
Yeah. Then the Nuggets one. Not that the Nuggets one was unjustified, but in this instance, there was, you could see it coming from a little farther away.
Yeah, but that didn't stop the newspaper columnists from getting on their high horse and crying out in the name of the fans how they were cheated. And God, I hate guys like that.
I mean, like, it's just, I guess it's just at the end of the day, which, like, whose fans is he cheating? Because,
well, according to the Oklahoman columnist, he was cheating the Spurs fans in Portland who came to the game. He was cheating the Portland fans who wanted to see a competitive game. He was cheating the fans watching on TV because it was a nationally televised game on NBA TV.
I do love his.
He was cheating the networks because they paid all this money. I don't know. It was really a blowhardy column.
Right. So that guy is a blowhard, but admittedly, the number of times that he's done that during a nationally televised game, I would argue, it is bordering on like more than coincidence. I don't argue that he's not like an idiot, and I think he understands. I would argue that there's something like a little bit, I don't know, antagonistic about the particular instances in which he does it.
I would say that's absolutely true. I mean, Andrew, I didn't read the column you're talking about. Are you talking about Darnell Mayberry?
No, it was Barry Trammell, I think, from the Oklahoman. I think he's a general sports columnist. It wasn't Mayberry, though.
Yeah, I mean, this is always the argument, though, right? That you're cheating fans from like seeing their favorite players.
Yeah,
I if you're telling me that you're cheating Portland fans by having them have one of the most dominant performances of the season, I don't care who the competition is. Like, if you're going to the game and you're the kind of person who's sincerely bummed that Tim Duncan isn't playing in that game, I just don't understand how you wouldn't really appreciate the fact that the Blazers very much needed a good win. Like, I don't understand that logic at all. Like, I just
I have a hard time with guys who have a press credential and sit in the press section and have a parking pass to the game, you know, cry out in the name of the fans, you know, that sort of thing. Like, I wouldn't do that sort of thing because I know I'm not in those shoes at this point. But
right.
I don't know. It's just me.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And it's one of those things where, I mean, you saw it a lot in the offseason too, where people try to sympathize as best they can based on their perspective, whether it's with fans, whether it's the arena workers, whether it's with anyone. But, I mean, when you're trying to write from that place of objectivity, and, you know, I have no idea the specifics of this particular columnist, but I just – yeah, you don't really have much credibility in that arena in speaking for the fan. Like, I mean, if people are outraged, let them be outraged. If they want to, you know, picket, you know – go protest the Spurs, let them do that. If they want to write Popovich, you know, angry letters and, you know, spam his email inbox, let them do that. But I just don't – I don't see how that accomplishes anything, you know, feigning this outrage on behalf of other people when you're not outraged. And I guess that speaks to kind of a bigger problem in our society where we're outraged just because we think we should be and we think other people might be, but we're not actually – we don't give a shit, you know?
Or, you know, we're being angry because – we were telling someone they should be angry about this when they actually don't care.
Exactly.
You know, or getting offended for someone who we think should be offended and they're not.
Right. It's kind of like – oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. No, I was
going to say it's kind of like – oh, yeah. it's just kind of like political. It's almost – I feel like I've heard people complain that, you know, political discourse has become too much like sports – and sports discourse, but in some sense, maybe that's true. But then it's almost like come all the way back around, and sports discourse has become too much like politics, where instead of being partisan, what you're being is truly combative, right? And like engaging in like actual enemy creation, right? Like coming up with reason, like any reason to like other someone, whether it's like a LeBron figure or your opposing team or like, you know, or whatever, you know, and it's kind of I think you're right though. There's just kind of, there's a lot of negativity that's needless kind of, so, you know.
No, long story short, it's a stupid column and a waste of space on a dead tree.
It's true. It's true. Well, and, Rob, did you have anything, Andrew?
Have we asked Rob the nickname question yet?
Rob, do you have a nickname?
Like for my, do I have one that I tell people to call me?
Or one that people call you without your consent?
Risen, like other than Great and Gordian Spirit Animal.
Everyone calls me that.
Everyone calls you Spirit Animal or Great and Gordian Spirit Animal?
Great and Gordian Spirit Animal. I mean, they know what's up.
They know.
But other than that, not really. I mean, it's just – I think – I don't know. I'm kind of the opinion that the age of the nickname has come and gone. And whether that happens to be because, like, growing up in an age where players were nicknamed so prolifically in the NBA, and then also, you know, growing up kind of – I can understand why, like, teenagers have nicknames for each other, or like, growing up in school, you kind of have all these nicknames, especially if you're in sports or any kind of club or whatever like that. But, you know – as a 20-something guy, I just don't really have that kind of relationship with anyone where it's like, oh, let's just make up nicknames for each other.
People don't call you Jack White. They don't call you
– Again, only you call me Jack White, Graydon.
Yeah.
Maybe Jack White is your spirit animal. That's what we're really getting at here.
I feel like Jack White is your spirit. I feel like I am.
That's true.
Jack White is your spirit animal. Okay. So – fair enough. Well,
have you guys been asking this of people? I completely missed out on this train.
Yeah, we started during the lockout because we were running out of questions to ask people.
Understandable.
Yeah. Started asking people what their nicknames were. This is the hard-hitting journalism.
Yeah.
Really getting to the bottom of it, basically. Yeah, I got to go because Nightline's on the other line. I got to go. It's like, so. All right. Well,
gentlemen, this has been fun.
Yeah.
When do the Spurs and the Mavs play each other next?
I don't know.
You're asking us questions that we'd actually need to do research to know.
Right.
I don't know how that's going to fly.
You're asking us like we would know these sorts of things. What is this about?
Yeah.
Let me see if I can pull it up real quick on the old interwebs.
Do it.
It's a series of tubes.
And as a related question, kind of spinning off your nicknames bit, I'm like, how do you guys feel about the obsessive need to create nicknames for players? Like, I think the Blake Griffin one was the most egregious and annoying, where people were like, oh my god, this guy's so good, we have to make a nickname for him. Like, do you guys buy into – like, do you think nicknames have a place, or have we kind of reached a point in sports coverage where everything is repeated so many times that we just get annoyed with it?
I love the nicknames, but I hate lazy nicknames. I hate the first initial and the first syllable of the last name, you know, anything like that. Yeah. I like nicknames that are created not by the individual – like, you can't nickname yourself. Someone else has to
Jactus, the big.
Yeah, or you can't call yourself the Black Mamba.
Yeah.
It has to be, you know, something that doesn't rhyme with your name or something like that. And, you know, you can't call yourself it. Like, I thought the Mailman's a great nickname. Carl Malone.
I'm also down for nicknames, right, that there's maybe, like, a real backstory to.
Yeah, totally.
Like, for instance, like, maybe my – or not even a real backstory, but as much as, like, that you know, that you just naturally want to ask what's the deal with that. For instance, favorite nickname of mine is Skip to My Lou.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is right for all, you know, which at first you're like, what? You're like, what? Like, what? Like, first time I heard that, I mean, that made zero sense to me as far as Ray Ferralston's nickname.
Yeah.
So.
I'm kind of not a fan of nicknames that someone's given when they're like little kids and it just sticks with them. Like, I had a friend in high school.
Did you guys?
I'm still here.
But now that we're taking this pause, that means we actually have to contribute something worthwhile to keep listeners entertained, right? Like, they can't just be waiting all this time and then we talk more about unimportant things. Like, there has to be some big payoff at the end. All
right. You would think.
There's a chalupa contest at the end of this podcast. If we can reach 100 minutes, then we will give away chalupas.
Free chalupas for all.
Yep.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
I don't know what happened there.
I have no idea either.
We were talking about Ray Ferralston, and then I came back, and you guys were talking about chalupas.
It's a natural progression.
Which in some sense is that actually a more natural progression than it might seem.
It really is.
I don't know. Yeah, I am. Wait, I want to return this though. I don't know if you guys kind of wrap this up. I tend to be pro nicknames, right? But they're right. They have to be slightly more organic, and they can't be too if the process of coming up with them is like a highly public one, if anyone's ever like, we need to come up with a nickname,
mm-hmm.
then it's like, that's...
You don't want to crowdsource it.
No. You don't want to crowd... It's like, let... And it's not that you can't be there for the origin of the nickname, but it's like, it has to be more organic mm-hmm. than that. Someone just has to kind of throw it out there. And there's kind of this... like Potter Stewart, kind of like I know it when I see it mm-hmm. effect, right. where you're like, that's it. That's the nickname. You know what I mean? And you don't – it shouldn't be a deliberate process in any way.
You know what one of my favorite nicknames is? It's a boxing nickname, but Jermaine Bad Intentions Taylor.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorites.
Bad Intentions Taylor is a great – it's a great nickname.
That is very nice.
Yeah.
Bad Intentions is a very solid nickname.
Biggest problems is just that, like, those kind of nicknames I can get behind when it's like the, you know, in quotation marks in between the first and last name. It's when they try to, like, create this nickname to substitute for the player's name that I have a problem with. Like, even, you know, like, Paul Pierce being the Truth. Like, how do you use that? Like, you're never going to – it's not like an in-game call. You're going to say, oh, you know, great, great basketball, the Truth. Or, like, if you put it in print, it's even weirder. It's like, I don't know, when you have the like, Kenny the Jet Smith, for example, like, that's that dude's name at this point. Like, you just say that as a constant stream. But when it's the replacing of a name with a nickname, I think that's when we get in trouble.
Well, because, you know what, because there's also, it's also, but nicknames are, like, are a more fragile thing than we treat them as. Because I think the classic, or the best, most recent example being to cite a guy from another sport is Tyrann Mathieu, which of LSU, which and the Honey Badger was a fantastic nickname.
Yeah, it was.
And it became way too overused.
Yeah.
By the end of the last season. And it was like to where like Brent Musburger was like using that nickname a dozen times a telecast, and it was like,
and he dropped the. It was just Honey Badger.
Yeah, and at that point it had lost all of its flavor.
That just tells me how desperate we are for good nicknames in sports today.
Yeah. Because initially when I heard that, I was like, wow, that's a great – it also genuinely fit – it genuinely fit his style of play.
Yeah. Something which Honey Badger didn't care.
The Honey Badger didn't care. The Honey Badger took what he wanted. That was the whole thing, is that he was like a ball hawk. He had a nose for the ball in a way unlike I had ever seen few college players have. And that was – and so it's like he just – Honey Badger – if the Honey Badger wanted the ball, he would just take it, right? So like that was what made it so brilliant, because it actually related to his style of play, which I think is another maybe underappreciated – which was like maybe what was – truly classic about like Air Jordan, is that it actually was not merely like it made reference to the way he played basketball and his elevation and things like that.
Yeah.
Like that was, or the human highlight reel.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Are there any players at all now that have nicknames based on how they play? I mean, everyone is related somehow to their nickname, but it's like there are a lot of the shortening of the names, like Andrew was talking about, like T-Max and what, and D-Will and, you know, bullshit like that. But beyond that, does anybody really have a fitting nickname based on their game?
Well, you know, we did have Half Man, Half Amazing, Vince Carter.
That's kind of close.
There was a while when that was pretty fitting.
People in San Antonio, although multiple guys have had this nickname, people in San Antonio used to call Matt Bonner the Human Victory Cigar maybe about 4 years ago or something. That was fitting at the time.
Until he started playing 25 minutes a game.
Yeah, until he became you know, the solid rotation player. You know. I don't know. I can't – yeah, there's nobody like readily comes to mind, right? Everybody – it seems to have – it's all – yeah, it's like D. Rose or Stat or
– which I believe was a nickname he gave himself.
It was.
Again, unacceptable.
Yeah.
Have you guys read 7 Seconds or Less, that great Jack McCollum book about the Suns? I mean, one of my favorite stories from that was like McCollum kind of – catalogs all these various nicknames that Mar was trying to give himself to have to stick. And one of my favorites was Israel. And it's because Amari said that his game is real. Like, for now. and then I think from somewhere in between there and who he is today, spun off that whole, like, Amari kind of being Jewish, but I'm not sure if he's really a Jewish thing. So there's all this – he's such a fantastically weird guy in terms of, you know, creating this persona for himself. So, I don't know. I kind of appreciate him for the kitsch, you know, like just the ridiculousness of what he tries to do. Like, Black Mamba, I think, is really, really dumb. But Stat, I think, is so bad, it's hilarious.
Well, what about Dwayne Wade being the Flash?
That's actually a pretty good one.
The Flash is a good one. You know what's also a good one, which got a little oversaturated for a brief flash, but then didn't...
See what you did there.
Oh, I thought that was wholly unintentional, but I'll take credit for it. Is actually Durantula.
Yeah.
Right, which I like because he's kind of so spindly and long that I think that they're, you know what I mean? He clearly only has 4 limbs. He's not an arachnid, but
it's
he is.
An inconvenient little detail.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's no one else, though, that, you know, for me readily comes to mind that this is, like, about their style, which is a bummer. We don't, like, let...
It's a shame that our... You know, I would think that the creativity and the online collaboration we have in the community would be able to come up with better nicknames for people, but it seems like our creativity has just gone down the drain since the heydays of the nickname.
It really has.
Yeah.
I mean, all I want is like, as you know, I can't remember where this picture popped up on the internet. There's this great photo of a Rasheed Wallace poster where he's standing on the wings of like an F-15.
I saw that last week.
And I just want someone with a great nickname that they can make those like themed cheesy early 90s posters out of. And someone needs to bring that back and just mass produce the hell out of those, because I will buy every single copy. But I mean, if you don't have the nickname that can make that applicable, and if everyone just, you know, D Will and T Mac, then I don't know what you do.
Yeah.
I'm looking here. So admittedly, I'm now actually looking through a list of nicknames.
Is the Armadillo Cowboy on there?
That's cheating. I'm
not trying to cheat here. I'm trying to see if there's someone. I mean, there's a few that are jumping off the page at me. You know, the Croatian sensation, the Hick from French Lick.
Not crazy about the rhyme. You know, I'm a fan of good wordplay, which is, I mean, I like the tarantula, but the rhyming is a little bit much.
The Hick from French Lick. I can deal with. I like.
I mean, I tolerate it, but it's one of those things that I think is just like so ingrained at this point.
You know what I miss were names. Part of me, like, to, you know, we're going all over the place here, but part of me feel like the best names. There's three really good types of nicknames. One is that they genuinely reflect the style of play, the human highlight reel, Air Jordan, something like that. That they immediately make you wonder, where does it come from? So I think Skip to My Lou serves as a good, you know, as a good one. Or names where their relationship to the player is actually it's like tentative at best. It's like it's just there's like here's this come where like where they come from, but so commonly used to assume it. I think two really good ones being Muggsy Bogues and yep. Penny Hardaway.
Mm.
Where there's really it's not a play on their name. I mean, Penny, you could argue, is a play on Anfernee, but it's like – it's not like D. Rose or something. I mean, it's
– No, and I think that was something that was given to him – a name given to him growing up, too.
Yeah, right. So it's not – you know, so it's not that. You know what I mean? I think that there's – I like that. Ones where it's really just pretty – or like Zeke.
Yeah.
Where it's like, what? Like, what? It's like, why is that his name? But everyone runs with it.
I'm in complete agreement. I'm always a fan of the explicitly. And so after doing some quick Wikipedia searching, by the way, I figured out that apparently Penny comes from Anthony Hardaway's grandmother called him Pretty when he was growing up. Like, that's what she called him, Pretty, which is a very weird thing in itself. Which apparently just kind of bastardized its way into Penny, as language so often does. But yeah, I'm in complete agreement. I think those are the three sweet spots we're looking for with nicknames.
Right, and but we've gotten, I would say, and in most every instance, we've gotten away from that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of a contemporary nickname one we've come up with in the last 5 years, or even the last 10, that solidly fits. Well, maybe last five. I'll stick with last five. That solidly fits inside that category.
You know, the NBA blog that posts maybe once a week, and all it does is just assign a nickname to a player, but just put some thought into it and some justification in a post, could just rake up the hits, I think.
It could. I mean, but at the same time, I think someone could take that same idea and just, you know, it's very easy to half-ass that or to try to stretch something.
Well, sure, it's easy to half-ass everything.
I guess that's true.
Look at me.
Me also feels like you get away from – but then part of me, I'll admit to being skeptical because you get to the part where there has to be a certain – I feel like there has to be a certain degree of reification with the nickname. It has to, like – the process by which it was devised has to be somewhat of a mystery.
I don't know. I think there could be a very interesting research project in trying to track down the actual origins of some of these, like, really strange but good nicknames. Like, I mean, there's the commonly known stuff and things that guys have been asked about, but, like, especially those nicknames where even the players don't know where it came from and it just, like, latched onto them, I think it'd be really fascinating to find out kind of that organic process. I mean, I think that it definitely has to kind of happen on its own and that, as we've seen, you know, you get in trouble when you try to make a nickname. It's one of the, you know, it's, you can't think about elephants. You know, you have to just, it has to happen.
Right. Right. This brings me to a different kind of topic, which is that I've been recently, along the nickname, it's in a theory, I've been recently forwarding a theory that there's actually no such thing as a good band name.
Hmm.
The more you think about it, every band name is stupid. Because you named your band that. Because at some point in time, your band didn't have a name, and then you thought of that name, and then you named it that. And that's always a stupid moment.
Makes sense.
Be one legitimately universally beloved band name. Like, there has to be one.
I would posit that, like, the possible exception to the rule. Okay, so, by the way, you know what one which I think is absolutely evidence of my theory is the Beatles, which is a stupid name, and it's spelled stupidly, even though
it's also the 60s. I mean, what do you want?
No, I'm saying no. I love the Beatles. Like, I'm not some like weird contrarian here who's hating on the Beatles. I think I love the Beatles. The name is idiotic. I think that the possible exception could be like the Rolling Stones.
That was the exact example I was thinking of. I think that is a very solid band name on a number
That's
of levels.
A possible exception to this rule, but most every other band name is really stupid, actually.
But you don't like Megadeth?
Well, actually, Megadeth like owns the idiocy in this way that like I kind of respect.
That's true.
Like, of all
the band names, like hardcore death metal bands probably have legitimately good nicknames.
Well, yeah. So many band names are just happenstance. Like, oh, I saw a shirt that had that on it, so we named our band that.
Yeah.
So many have just lame stories behind them.
No, totally. And it's not even so much about the fact that they have lame stories behind them. It's about the fact that that you and your buddies who play music go by this moniker. Which I think is stupid.
Off the top of my head, another one that really is funny to me is that a band that I eternally make fun of, Cannibal Corpse. Like, that is a great, horrible, horrible band.
Well, right. So obviously there's a way that you could take this. The Cannibal Corpse takes this, and there's a lot of like, you know, death metal bands or like black metal bands who like just do something so absurd with their name that they kind of flip my theory on its head. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Like, did they like? Because at a certain point, it's like, I don't know. It's like people who like. If a person's like actively trying to make a tear, it's like, can you really watch Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus and say this is a terrible movie when like there was an explicit intention to make a bad movie the whole time? Something like that.
I think, you know, there's definitely another conversation to be had about bad movies that try to be bad, because there's this very, very delicate range in which like a movie that's self-aware about being as bad as it is can go way too far overboard to the fact that it's like, I think there needs to be a level of credibility where it's like, this is a low budget movie, but they still tried to make something that appealed to an audience and failed so spectacularly that I love it. You know, like Mega Shark the Giant Octopus, I think it falls in that sweet spot very well. Just like I've seen, like, Mega Piranha is another great one, or Mega Fault. Yeah. But Mega Fault is this great movie about Brittany Murphy, her last movie before she died. And she's like tracking down killer earthquakes, and it is so good.
That doesn't make any sense.
Just watch.
That's actually one of the most ridiculous plot conceits I've ever heard of.
Another one that I haven't seen yet, but I'm very anxious to, is called Sharks in Venice, like about the city of Venice, and like apparently there's these giant sharks that are swimming around in like the series of canals in the city and just eating all these people. That sounds pretty wonderful. But you know, I think that especially when one of these movies blows up and becomes really popular and they try to make a sequel to it, that's when things really gross and unseemly, because you know the magic, as it were, is completely gone.
Yeah. If you look at my Facebook page, the image, my Facebook photo is of me in a shark costume, and that's because not this most recent Halloween, but the previous one, my old girlfriend and I went as Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus.
That's the most romantic thing I've ever heard.
It was pretty. We had a battle. We had a battle. it was good. So, yeah, they were good. I had a giant shark costume, like a full body shark costume. It was pretty good.
Nice.
So, right. Point being, there are no more good nicknames.
This is
never
true.
Any bad names. And
it's all going to crap.
And it's all going to crap.
All right, let's wrap this up, fellas, because, we just talked about band names.
I think this is the good stuff. Yeah, see, people are like, anybody who had the patience to make it to this point is going to get some real nuggets.
Some really good chalupas.
It's a real treat. Yeah, they're going to have, if anybody, you know what, if anybody can bear with it and if any reader can accurately describe to me what we talked about, like over the last, let's say, 30 minutes of this, can give me, I'll buy them a chalupa next time I'm down in Texas. They'll have earned it. They'll have earned it.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Rob, we appreciate you coming on and being our guest, man. And we will, we'll see you next week, man.
Yeah, sounds great. Thanks for having me. It's been a very enlightening conversation for all parties involved, I think.
It's we're very cultured and well-rounded around here.
This is our intellects will it. We're at, you know, high gear this evening.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
Bye. Later. See you again. Bye.